Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with jazz pianist Johannes Wallmann on the 2022 CD Precarious Towers. This is his 10th album as a leader, and it features a new high-octane quintet forged during the pandemic on a new set of tunes that celebrates that in-person music with joyful abandon. He premiered the new group in October 2020 on a live stream concert from Madison's Union Theater. The album comes out on June 3rd, 2022. We already caught up with him during the heat of the pandemic, but things have changed lately, so there's some more daylight in the future, and we get into that. Enjoy the story.
Well, hey, thanks for taking a minute to talk about the new album. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, you know, we caught up during this pandemic already and kind of covered some things, and we're in a whole different place right now. You know, things are opening up. There's a little bit more clarity. Live shows are happening. So Precarious Towers is your new album coming out on June 3rd. And I'm curious, the timing right now with things the way they are, how do you feel about this release right now?
Well, the timing is fantastic because we've been sort of operating with one hand tied behind our backs, trying to make music, throughout the whole pandemic. At first, as people just doing solo projects or things with, multi-tracking one instrument at a time and doing these like Brady Bunch kind of videos and so on, and everybody was so desperate to make music, to do this thing that we love, that hopefully our audiences love, that connects us to people. And it was so hard to do it. And then this particular project, this quintet, which had its first performance in October of 2020, really came about as a jumping on the opportunity to make music with people again. So the first performance of this group was part of this commission series for local and regional composers in Madison, Wisconsin, for which I'd written a bunch of music. And rather than postpone it, which had happened to the previous series of concerts, they were able to get their hands on a concert hall that's with a gigantic stage that normally seats 1,100 people. And we played on that stage with lots of distancing to an audience of nobody live, but about 1,000 people tuned into the performance online, because that's when everybody was just hungry for music. So it was like the five of us and a really skeletal music and video crew who were broadcasting this. And it's such a weird situation to play, because of course you feed off the audience, and knowing that there's people out there listening is awesome, but it's not quite the same as seeing them, having them be in the space with you. And even in that sort of weird situation, it was, it's the first time that I put this band together. They're all people I'd worked with before, but never in that particular constellation. And it was wonderful. It was so much fun to make music together with these people. I mean, the chemistry was instant, and the energy was instant, and so on. So ever since then, that was the first thing. And then when we recorded the album, that was a few months later. And at that point, it becomes sort of clear that we could pretty safely, I mean, there's still pre-vaccines and so on, but that we could pretty safely record music in a recording studio together, as long as we had some distancing, people wore their masks and so on. And then, of course, the key instrument is, what do you do with the saxophone? Because that's, you can't put a mask on. I mean, people do, but it doesn't really work from a pandemic point of view. What do you do with the saxophone? And the recording studio is a perfect place for it, because you can stick a saxophone into an ISO booth, and the ISO booth is there to isolate sound so you can mix the album more easily. But it does that by isolating air. So then we realized, okay, we could do some performances, and we recorded the album in pre-vaccine, but in a COVID-safe kind of environment, and that was super fun. And then we started doing some gigs and did some outdoor performances over the summer and so on. And yeah, I mean, every time we take another step outside of the, this social distancing thing, which really is like never was about social distancing, but it was about physical distancing. And, because we've been trying to be social all along, but every step that we take, it's just makes the music, the experience even more wonderful. The music's been great all along since that first gig on that lonely big stage, but now to be able to share it with people in person is just fantastic.
So the one thing too about this pandemic is there's been a lot of outgrowths that have been positive, and clearly you forging this band during this time has to be a very positive, reverberating outcome from what we've lived through, what you've lived through.
Yeah, I mean, the plan for that band preceded the pandemic because, I pitched the project to this commissioned composition series prior to the pandemic. So the intent had been there before that. The fact that it would work out, that this band would work out as well as it did, it's always a bit of a crapshoot when you have a new creative project. You try to, you're going to try to do something that you think is going to be special, and you hope it will be, and then you put the work and effort into it and hope that it'll pay off, and it really did. If there was a silver lining to this particular cloud with this project, it was that people were suddenly more available, because part of trying to, I've been wanting to put this band together for a while, and central Wisconsin, Chicago area, I mean, these are South Central Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Madison, Chicago, where the musicians are from. There's a very healthy music scene, and I'm sure that's not something that everybody around the country is aware of. I certainly didn't know that when I lived in New York for all those years and so on. But when I had the opportunity to move here and I did my research, I found out, like, oh yeah, there's some musicians here who can play, and there's audiences who are really into supporting the music as well. So it turns out getting the top players from, some of the top players from this region together is challenging, because everybody's got a lot of things going on, and suddenly with the pandemic, this project is kind of the only game in town. So when I, in December, when I thought, hey, you know what, I think we can do this in a pandemic safe way in December of 2020. And I called everybody and I said, hey, do you want to make a record like in 6 weeks from now? Do you have anything going on? And everybody said, well, I have nothing going on. And yeah, that was super fun. Like, that gig was super fun. Let's make the record. Let's do it. Typically this is something we would have had to plan out like 6-9 months in advance to make sure I get everybody on the same, on the same schedule. So having a chance to actually get everybody playing together, to kickstart this thing was pretty awesome.
How did you construct the songs on this album? How did all of it kind of get assembled and put together?
Every song kind of has a has a different backstory, but I'd say about a little more than half of the material was written summer of 2020. So I had the band in place. I was writing for this commission series, this October gig that I was hoping would happen. And you know what it was like in early 2020, mid 2020. You're kind of like, okay, things are shut down for 2 weeks, and then hopefully we can go back to everything. And now it's going to be another 2 weeks, and now it's going to be another month, and things aren't looking so good. So hopefully we'll all go back to normal by the end of the year or something. And fingers crossed, and a lot of wishful thinking. And in the end, everything was much more disruptive than we ever thought it would be. But in the meantime, it was summer, and I had nothing to do other than take my dogs for a long walk. And because all the gigs were canceled, nobody was doing any traveling, and the little bit of socialization was happening outdoors. But there was just a lot of downtime, so I had lots of time to write music. And So there's some pieces on there called the Pandemico Suite, which were very much inspired by by current events. But really the first there's two pieces that I wrote at the beginning of the shutdown, and one of them is called Quiet Out There, and that was really kind of just dealing with the sort of dread, existential dread that we're all feeling out in the first few weeks of the pandemic when. I looked out on the street and there weren't even really any cars out there. Everybody, almost everybody who could was holing up at home and in their houses, and people weren't even going outside. And I was kind of trying to capture that sort of like the dread of that and the sort of drip of like bad news coming out and, so on. So there's that one piece. What's little bursts of activity in there as well, sort of melancholy kind of vibe, a little bit inspired by the by the Raindrop prelude by from Chopin as well, and so on. But certainly a very melancholy piece. And the other piece was sort of the opposite of that, which is sort of trying to really write a social piece of music, something that's about like socializing and just having fun. And where that came about was you know, we're trying to wrap up the academic year, and I teach jazz ensembles at the University of Wisconsin. And ensembles, of course, is the one thing that translated the worst to an online kind of presence, because really the technology just isn't there for us to be making music together at the same time with multiple players, so on. So, yeah, so we ended up, you know, pivoting to a recording format of the people sort of recording one track at a time. And I wanted to, for the students, for that to feel not just like a drag and so on, but to also feel special and to offer something that they couldn't just do on their own. So I wrote a bunch of music for the students. And one piece was for the rhythm section from our big band. You know, so, and there was a vibraphonist in the big band. So I wanted to write something for vibraphone. And also knowing that I was writing music for this vibraphone, for this quintet, you know, that was simultaneously writing a music for my professional quintet that was about to have its first performance with vibraphone. I wanted to write a piece of music that was really very much mallet percussion, keyboard percussion, vibraphone, xylophone, all those type of instruments kind of based. And one of the inspirations was Frank Zappa, who in his band in the 70s had this incredible percussionist, Ruth Underwood. And he wrote these, it's just ridiculous, marimba parts for her that are as complicated as any of the guitar parts that he wrote, and they're wonderful, and they're just really quirky, and they jump all over the keyboard, and they in a way that really doesn't sit well on any other instrument, but I kind of custom made for that. So I wrote this piece of music, and I called it Saturday Night Meat Raffle. The meat raffle being, again, a sort of quirky Midwestern tradition that people go out to a bar and on a Friday night, on a Saturday night, and buy raffle tickets. And in the end, the winner of this raffle wins a big pack of frozen meat, steaks, all kinds of cuts and so on. And I'm a vegetarian, so to me, that isn't particularly appealing to participate in, but I thought the tradition was just really fun and quirky and cute and very, very Midwestern. And I'm not from the Midwest, as you can tell from my accent. I love those kind of like social traditions. So I wanted to write a piece that was kind of Zappa-esque and featured the vibraphone as, in that kind of style. And then we recorded it, and it turns out that melody, it turns out, actually, because it was my first time writing for vibraphone, and I don't play the instrument myself, turns out it's also kind of a beast to play on vibraphone. I thought I was writing something kind of idiomatic, but it wasn't. But Mitch just, and the student who played it did a fine job with it, but we took the tempo a little bit slower than what I had intended. And then Mitch Shiner, who plays on the album and in this quintet, just rocked it and, put in the work to learn it. And then as we're getting closer to the recording session, I thought, if I put Mitch through all of this, I should learn to play it myself too on the piano, which was even harder. But again, it was a fun melody. It sounds good, but it's just a beast to play. And then after I learned, I thought, well, I might as well ask Sherelle to like also learn it on the alto sax and see if that works. And then that was probably the thing that took the most rehearsal time, so those were a couple of pandemic-related pieces. There's also some pieces that I wrote before the pandemic that I thought would be just fun to play. So there's this one of the pieces that's a single release from the album is called McCoy, and anyone who listens to it will immediately know why it's called that, because it's my tribute to my biggest inspiration and probably one of my biggest influences as a piano player. And I really wear my influence on my sleeve with that one. It's probably something that 10 years ago, I would have been reluctant to do, because everybody wants to make sure that they're out there with their own creative voice. And I think I am with this too, but it's very strongly McCoy influence because it's a tribute to him. And in a way, that was a piece, come to think of it, that was a piece that was also written during the pandemic, but it had nothing to do with the pandemic. It had to do with the fact that McCoy passed away right before the start of the pandemic. I believe it was February of 2020. So I wanted to write a piece of music for him.
So what are you ultimately hoping the listener gets from this album?
Joy. Joy, connection. Nice. Connection. And, you know, I always try to, I think something that's true for all of my music is that I try to write, I try to write music that to me is the thing that I felt that made me fall in love with jazz, I grew up with a lot of music in my life, but I didn't discover jazz until I was a young teenager. And the thing that just appealed to me about jazz is that it's music for the heart, for the feet, and for the head. It's music that makes you, fall in love with yeah, it's got great melodies and so on. It's music about passion, but it's also music to dance to, or to tap your feet to move your body to. Yeah, it's music for the feet, and it's music for the head. It's also smart music that hopefully rewards repeated listening. So I was hoping, I'm always trying to cover all of those three bases in my music, because that's the stuff that I love to listen to, and I try to make music that if I like listening to it, hopefully there are other people who do as well. And this one is a little bit more geared towards the feet as well. There's a lot of grooves on this. Precarious Towers. That's a fun piece. It's just kind of a happy piece. The name notwithstanding, Precarious Towers, there's nothing, with that piece, there's nothing sinister about this. That title came about because, my daughter who, was three at the time, so it was a couple of years ago that I wrote this piece. We still do this, but at the time she was absolutely mad about building Lego Duplo towers. And she would build them as high and as ornate and kind of baroque in their construction as she could. And we're building these towers together until they were so high that they just would collapse. And they're like architectural hubris. And, she would take so much pleasure in seeing these towers collapse. And then she'd say, Papa, let's build another precarious tower. And she called them precarious towers because we're talking about not making them too precarious. And she loves language and words and so on. So this idea of building precarious towers was just kind of a very playful, joyful thing. And that's what I hope people get from this, sort of a joyful, joyful music that's about tapping your feet, but that also engages the brain and also engages the heart.
So as we do kind of start returning to live music, what do you hope we all realize about the power of it as we do all kind of come back?
Well, but it's all about the ability to connect. It's a way to have some of the most meaningful, deepest connection in music is that we can have with other people, while at the same time, it's not necessarily about any particular thing. I can tell you all I want about what my inspirations were, my process was, with the title of these pieces or with the announcement of that. But I hope but there's no right or wrong way to listen to music. If somebody hears a piece and they hear something and it connects with them and they get a completely different connection out of it, but it means something to them, well, then we made a connection. And the connection really was, hopefully, was about a very deep level of, like, connecting on a place that means to be human. There are lots of different social animals out there that, that connect with each other meaningfully. But really, like, music is a very deep way of, music and language are things that make us uniquely human and go right to the core of who we are as a species and as a society. And language is beautiful, but language is kind of also about conveying information, telling each other like important pieces of information about like things that we need to know about everyday life. Hey, this thing is over there, go get it, is, something we can do with language. In music is this thing that kind of doesn't do any of that. It's just there for us to connect. It's not about conveying any information. So in some ways, it's incredibly, it's a total luxury. It's it'd be utterly superfluous to us if it weren't about connecting. So I'm hoping that this will be a way for people to, you know, feel a sense of connection to us as we made this music for our listeners and for ourselves and for everybody out there. And, you know, if people are able to come to one of our performances, I think they'll very much feel that connection as well. But I think the album does that as well.
My final question to you is this. Say you bring the band to perform the album here in Kansas City, and you have to describe what that show would be like. What would a live show presenting this music in Kansas City be like?
it would be a lot like the album, and that would be our starting point. You know, we'd play some of the music from the album. We'd play music that I think would hopefully connect with people's feet, heart, and head. And then beyond that, it would be also what the audience would make it. You know, that's the beautiful thing of, you know, playing with really creative musicians. I've played in Kansas City before, and it's been way too long. I'd love to be back, and I'd love to bring my band. So, you know, you just gave me some inspiration for that. I've booked a bunch of performances for the summer, and nothing in Kansas City yet. So I'm going to work on that. But certainly, you know, the performers that, the audience is part of the performance in a very, very meaningful way for us. And I think one way to sort of describe that when it comes to improvising musicians is imagine that you're around a table having a conversation with a couple of people, and then another person comes and sits down and starts to listen. Even if they don't say a word, it's going to change the way the conversation is going to go, right? So, you know, just their presence makes it different. So until we're there, we don't really know how it's going to change the music, but it will, and we'd make it a, I know we'd make it a special experience for whoever is there, because them being there makes it special for us.
Man, that was a wonderful answer. Hey, thank you for opening up about the album. It's great to catch up with you. Good luck with everything.
Well, thank you for your interest, and thanks for everybody who listens to this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Germany, Madison, New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Johannes for his time, music, and stories. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit neonjazz at youtube.com, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to the neonjazz.blogspot.com. And finally, for everything Joe Domino related, go to joedomino.com, and there you can donate to the cause through Patreon or PayPal. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.